And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
This may be the last song I write for a while.
Hello, Harvey Pissman, attorney at law.
Is that your lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Toilet law?
Yeah. He's an expert in bathroom.
Oh,
in bathroom law.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of CD Burners.
Hello, Harvey Pissman, attorney at law.
Is that your lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
What does he do, toilet law?
Bathroom.
Flush accidents?
Yeah, slip and falls. He specializes in slip and falls.
That's so funny.
In the piss arena.
Mm.
In the yeah. Hi, guys. Welcome to CD Burners. We did a rough one. We just recorded a real rough one.
That episode's behind us. We're on to another one. Today, we're talking about the All-American Rejects self-titled album, The All-American Rejects.
So, which is so funny because it really gives like Mark by Mark Jacobs by Jacobs by Mark.
Yeah, I guess you could say that with any self-titled, right?
Yeah, but this one in particular, because it's like a three
thing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a lot. And when I was doing a lot of reading for it, it was like All American Rejects by the All American Rejects. And they should have named the first song off the album The All American Rejects.
That would have been funny. That would have been a funny joke. Tyson is so funny. I was listening to a lot of interviews with him to prep for this. And I was like, you are just a fucking wacky, hilarious man.
Dude, I want to start off by saying that he is so awesome.
He really
is. Tyson is so cool. He's a genuinely, genuinely funny and cool guy. And for like, he's one of those guys where like, he probably shouldn't have been born into such a handsome body.
He's really handsome and angular.
Yeah. Like he probably shouldn't have been like such a handsome guy. You know, like his personality gives like
dorky.
Yeah. I think he's smart enough to know that, you know, he recognizes it, but really doesn't lean on it. Like it's, you know, knowing him, he's done some really funny shit with us. We did the Seinfeld.
Yeah, I was thinking about that today.
Yeah, we did a Seinfeld sketch with him.
He played the role of Kramer.
And legitimately nailed it.
I mean, he's an actor. Like he's a real actor. Like he's on Parenthood. That was where I saw, you know, a lot of his acting chops, but I think his breakout movie was, or like his first like movie role was for The House Bunny.
With that one lady that was
Anna
in like,
Faris.
Yeah, every like teen comedy for like
a decade.
Yeah, 10-year run.
And then he just had a new movie come out with fucking Kendall Roy himself, or not Kendall Roy, Logan Roy. He acted opposite of Logan Roy.
Really?
Prisoner's Daughter. I don't know if it's come out yet. Oh, it did come out. Came out? Yeah, it came out. But yeah, you can see Tyson Ritter in Prisoner's Daughter acting across from Brian Cox.
Who is Logan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's a serious actor. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's a good actor.
It was a really, that surprised me when he was like, yeah, well, I'll do that.
Yeah, and it was like, dude, it was like as hot as it is now. It was like 110 degrees. And we were filming it in the Emo Night office on Hoover Street in Silver Lake, which was like the one that we had that had like a little merch store in front. And then it was literally just a table. And that place had like the shittiest air conditioning ever. It was so goddamn hot. We had lights. We had to light it from the top so it looked like a sitcom. And I remember just being fucking hot as shit. And Tyson was like the best sport about it. We were all sweating our asses off and he just was completely Kramer. It was hard to like act opposite him because it wasn't Tyson anymore. He was like, he was legit acting.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, like we're also not actors.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, we also were, you know, not, we haven't done this for so long. And it was, I don't know, I remember being really nervous, but then once we got into it, you know, it was really fun. And I think him being so into it made us like be like, all right, let's take it again and do it again and do it right. And I think it came out. That's like,
that is the best intro video.
It's a great intro video. If you guys look it up, look up Emo Night, like Seinfeld on YouTube.
I remember coming home from that shoot And this was at a time when I lived in an apartment complex that had a pool, and nobody used the pool. But I remember, like, it was so fucking hot that day, and I just laid in the pool, like, on a floaty, and I was just thinking about how absolutely insane my life was. Because this was, like, 2017. We were a few years into Emo Night, and I was like, this is just crazy. Like, I just filmed a fucking Seinfeld video with Tyson Ritter as Kramer. Like, this is so cool.
It is one of the moments where I was like, really strange.
Yeah.
But also just so goddamn cool. It just does go to show that he's an awesome guy and very cool. I do think that he is a genius.
I think so, yeah.
Like, I think that it's...
these songs are fucking insane. Like, there's a few gems on this album, but the album after this, like, if you look at, like, All American Reject's full track record of songs, like, they're insanely good pop songs.
Well, I think also knowing him, you know, we know him personally, and the fact that he's got that, I have to do stuff and make stuff all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, regardless of, like, what it is, he has to, if he's not making something, he doesn't feel good. Like, I understand that. I'm not that as we're that, but I get, like, having to do something to satisfy the God-sized hole in you.
Yeah.
But he's got this, like, genius thing about him. And, you know, we've talked about it on here a couple times before. You know, there's star power that you just, like, feel around. And he's one of those guys for sure.
I think it has to do with the height.
He's really tall.
I think it's this, it's like the same effect that I have, like the same feeling that I get around MGK and Gabe. And it's because they're tall.
Dude.
But they're all stars. They are all stars.
They really are. And there's something about them that, like, I don't know. They all are like geniuses in their own right.
I do have a Tyson and MGK story that I'm going to talk about later on in the pod.
Another MGK story?
Yeah.
He's going to text us and be like, stop telling stories about me.
Well, I'm just repeating a story that Tyson said on Stryker's show.
I want to start with a good quote where he was like at Stryker's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We did that interview with Stryker.
This was when he was still at K-Rock.
Yeah. And didn't he get like something wrong? Or like, I remember what he said.
He went through a list of bands. It was like, even when I was brand new, and he went through a list of bands and he was like, okay, would these bands be played at Emo Night? Fall Out Boy. And I was like, yes. My Chemical Romance. Yes. The Smoking Popes. And I was like, nope.
Yeah, the Smoking Nopes.
Yeah, and then afterwards you kept saying the Smoking Nopes.
Yeah, those. That,
now, anytime I hear the name Smoking Popes, I just think the Smoking Nopes.
Yeah, I can't tell if he was it was in seriousness, right?
Yeah, so,
like he was
being serious
about it.
The fuck are the Smoking Popes?
I think they're like early Warped Tour, like situation.
Maybe we should book them.
Put on just like 10 seconds from a Smoking
Pope. Oh, the Chicago punk scene of 1991. They're really punk guys. It says they're a pop punk band. The song's called Need You Around. They're touring with the Get Up Kids.
What? Maybe this is this something I missed? It's like a Gaslight anthem.
It's like Morrissey.
The Morrissey Gaslight anthem.
All right.
I like it more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
It gives like bar pop punk kinda. And maybe I don't know if it's because it has like the word smoking in it or like, but it gives like, oh yeah, these guys would be at like if BJ's bar, like Bar and Grill had like a stage. Like, I feel like that's where I would see the Smoking Nopes. This is a good quote to start out with the All-American Rejects from a stranger on Reddit. To me, in retrospect, the funniest part of it all is that the quote-unquote real punks who were going to basement shows and squats and reading zines like Heart Attack saw all of the glossy pop punk stuff as corporatized. There was no difference between bands like All American Rejects and, say, Seosin or Boys Night Out, who were viewed within the scene as being a little more difficult or dissonant and were therefore more legitimate.
Who was this quote from?
A stranger on Reddit.
All right.
And I thought it was really good because the All-American Rejects were viewed in that corporate, and I think it is, it has a lot to do with having, like, a pretty damn handsome lead singer. Like, and it was at the time when Backstreet Boys and all those bands were, boy bands were really big, and so those guys saw it, and they went, and so they pushed it to the top, but ultimately, like, dude, I remember hearing Swing Swing, like, I think it was literally the first song I illegally downloaded, maybe.
Really?
Like, I really do think that it might have been, like, the first song.
The last song?
Swing Swing was, like, maybe the first one. And
can you imagine if the last song was actually the first song that you downloaded? That'd be pretty cool.
I can't imagine it, because it wasn't. I remember thinking that it sounded, I was like, oh, this is what I like. I was like, oh, this is like this. I like this. I don't know if this is right. Again, it is a podcast of misinformation, but I heard that this whole album was recorded with a drum machine.
I don't think that is true. I think that Nick Wheeler played real drums on it, but their first show that they played when Doghouse Records came into town to see if they wanted to sign them, they used a Casio as the drummer.
Which
they literally just, like, pressed a beat on the keyboard and then played the songs.
Which I think is fucking cool.
It, like, is cool.
Like, that's cool as hell. And another reason why I think it's cool is because, again, Tyson is around my age. And those sounds, like, while we listen to those sounds now and we view them as, like, old or corny or whatever, like, those were, like, vintage sounds to me.
Here's my take on it, is I think that these are some incredible pop songs, and I think that All-American Rejects never really they didn't come from a scene. Like, they're from Stillwater, Oklahoma. They weren't part of, like, New Jersey. They weren't out playing basement shows. There was no culture for that. When you listen to this album, and it's just an album recorded by Tyson and Nick, it's literally just two guys, like, 17 years old, insane, having a great time, like, making fun pop songs. And they're not being, like, cheeky and weird and putting, like, a Casio sound in there to, like, be different. They're doing it because they like it. You know, they're not putting in, like, 80s synth to just say, like, look how cool we are and different. It's like they like that stuff.
Which is the part of the genius that I think is the All-American Rejects. Like, that to do something because you like it, not because you think somebody else is going to like it, is the cool thing.
That's what this whole band is. And I think, like, you know, they're from Stillwater, Oklahoma, which is, like, Oklahoma State, where the college is. Like, it's huge college football territory, and there's no way to, like, get out of the hometown unless you play football or you make music. And they did it. They got out. This was their ticket out of there. I'm actually, like, kind of shocked at the date of this album. It came out October 15, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
This album sounds later than that, and it's not.
See, I think it sounds exactly that time.
The way that it caught on, I think, was perfect for that time. Because if you think about, like, songs like The Last Song or Swing Swing going to radio, it makes perfect sense because The Middle had just been the biggest song in the world over radio. All of a sudden, all the radio DJs were like, give us more of that. People are eating that shit up. These songs fit perfectly with that. And you know who saw that? DreamWorks. They scooped it up.
Which motherfuckers over at DreamWorks are these, like, emo heads?
Yeah, they were doing a lot of work over there. There's definitely an A&R, I forget his name, but he was responsible for a lot of these huge albums. I mean, this was originally signed to Doghouse Records. And do you know why they chose Doghouse, Morgan?
No, but I have a cool story about this.
They chose Doghouse
because the guy who was in trouble with his girlfriend?
No, you can tell it after this.
Doghouse Records name? The name Doghouse Records?
No. All-American Rejects chose to send their demo to Doghouse.
Mm.
Because they were obsessed with the Get Up Kids.
Obviously, as you should be.
The demo ended up in the trash can, at the Doghouse Records office, and the intern, who was actually the owner's niece, Nepo Baby, scooped it out of the trash can, took it home for the weekend, and was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome. And then that Monday, slapped it down on the table, and then they got signed to Doghouse. Well, Doghouse came down and went to that show, and then they signed them.
Oh, that was my story.
Yeah.
That was my story. What a cool thing, though. That's like a real Empire Records, like, movie scenario thing.
I mean,
thing.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, literally, it doesn't happen. It's
they
cool.
They put it in, like, manila envelopes and mailed it out to a handful of labels. And they were just like, yeah, fuck yeah, we like the Get Up Kids. Let's send it to Doghouse. But, yeah, it later got upstreamed to DreamWorks. And DreamWorks gave it the, you know, Jimmy treatment and blew them the fuck up.
Yeah, and blew up they did. I remember, like, I had a real, I think that's why, where I found them probably through, like, me being obsessed with Get Up Kids and whatever Doghouse put out and all that shit and trying to, but I remember Swing Swing was the first song and it felt, like, really thin and weird and something about it, like, it didn't have, like, a normal structure, like,
the organ, like, you weren't hearing organs, like, in pop music.
Yeah, but it also, like, that song in particular, I was always waiting for, like, something else to it, and it never came, and I really liked that.
You know what I love about Swing Swing?
What?
I love, and I think this is probably why it was such a massive hit on radio, actually. I think this was a factor. Like, listen to this. Like, you're like, all right, up next on K-Rock, we got a brand new hit from DreamWorks Records band, the All-American Rejects. This is Swing Swing. You're listening to K-Rock.
Oh, a lead-in? It's got, like, a good lead-in for...
for radio.
For radio.
Like, yeah. Insane.
That's why you, like, let it play.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, a good... it's awesome. Like, from the get-go, I think that they had, like, this, like, that star power thing going on. Another thing about, you know, him and his geniusness is that's why there's so many sounds and longer songs, and it's a lot. Like, there's a lot to it because there's a lot in his brain that he needs to get out on something. And I think that doesn't sit well with some people who want, like, a 2.5 minute, like, give it to me. Like, and I really respect him for doing that on this album. You know, I saw a lot of Reddit stuff that was like, you know, it was like a little long. It was like long for me. It was like long for me. But, like, I don't know. I always thought it was, like, very appropriate for the songs that, you know, where it was a freshman album.
It's crazy to think about how young they were writing a song like Swing Swing. Can you imagine writing a song like Swing Swing at 17? It's a perfect song.
Yeah, it is a perfect song. The thing that Jimmy did differently was not strictly talk about, like, relationships. And in this album, The All-American Rejects, by The All-American Rejects, mm-hmm. starring The All-American Rejects, mm-hmm. it was very relationship-based.
Yes.
It was really, really relationship-based. And I think there were some critics that were like... In fact, I read a couple of reviews that took, like, the Morgan angle of being like, I don't like the name of this band. And there I'm going into it with a predisposed notion that it's going to be bad. And there were a lot of critics that said that.
Because of the name?
Yeah, they thought it was, like, very immature. They thought it was like, oh, we're the punk guys. We're, like, the rejects, you know? Like, and, you know, they went into it thinking like that, and then they found out that it was, like, about, you know, relationships, and they kind of, at least in the punk world, like, really wrote it off. They really, really wrote it off, and I think looking a little deeper into it, like you said, two 17-year-old guys using Casios, fucking recording it to themselves, giving it to Doghouse Records that the Get Up Kids was on because he fucking loved the Get Up Kids. Like, in my mind, that's punk. Like, I think that's a cool punk thing to do. And you miss the forest for the trees or whatever the saying is. And I think a lot of those old music reviewers miss the mark on this one. And look, I agree. The name...
I like it. I think it's a cool name.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that cool of a name, but once I started listening to them, I like grew into it much more. Now I think it's a cool name.
Going back to what you were saying, like this actually being punk, this album was made for $15,000. And then it sold 2 million copies. That's a pretty good return on your investment there for Doghouse Records.
Guys, we call that ROI in the business.
It's true. It's what they say. Morgan, what were your standout tracks?
Dude, the last song is like one of the best songs ever written.
Incredible.
It's like really just one of the best songs ever written. I think most of the songs on this album are really, really good. I think the last song, I always forget that it's on this album because I feel like it's
a perfect segue, I think, actually, to the future evolution of the band.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they chose the right two singles off this album, which were Swing Swing in the last song. But they did kind of drop the ball. They actually tried to release Time Stand Still as a third single. Nobody cared.
I apologize. The first song I downloaded was Paper Heart.
That would make sense because it's the first song off the album.
That's the first song.
And that
should
have been the third single.
That's the song I downloaded, and I was like, that's what I'm talking about with like the Casio, the keyboard, yeah.
It kind of gives Hello Goodbye a little bit. Yeah, with like the programming.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that they have like songs like that where it's like kind of electronic drum based, but then also there are some songs on here that sound like Blink 182, you know, where they're like more pop punk than they are like 80s pop.
And that's the thing, man. You know, knowing Tyson over the ages, he's like, all right, I like this now. I'm bringing this in from my youth. I'm drawing inspiration from this and starting side projects and starting bands, and you know, I want it to sound like this. And he's always true to himself. And that's the thing about this is that it sounded really true to what this band wanted to be, although it evolved over time. And, you know, you listen to the drums on Swing My Paper Heart or Paper Heart, and then you listen to the drums on the next album of Move Along. You know, those are two entirely different sounding things.
Well, they got two new members for the album after this. And yeah, I think those drums on Move Along are fucking incredible. It's such a, like, how do you make a hook with drums? They did that somehow. Like, as soon as we have that song in our festival set, and like, as soon as we hit those drums, like, everybody knows what's coming.
Yeah, Andy from Fall Out Boy did it. This song does it. Mm-hmm. Are there any other?
I'm sure there's a few more, but, like, pretty iconic.
Oh, Good Charlotte, the Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good intro.
That's a good example. Trying to think of any other, like, drum hooks.
Probably Blink One.
There, I'm sure there's like, yeah, just everything hell at once all the time. I like it when we talk about that stuff. What these albums do, and then relate it to some of the other albums, like another other songs in that genre that do that thing. That's why I keep bringing up like a Miserable at Best type thing, because I've found over the course of us doing this, those are the songs that rarely make it on or almost don't make it on, and they end up being like everybody's favorite. And yeah. I like stuff like that.
A couple of weird things that I found about this album during my research was that they toured with CKY.
Yeah.
Quickly after putting this album out. It was right after they put this album out. Random that they're even touring with CKY.
And then they got kicked off, right?
Which we don't know why.
I literally wrote another cool thing I'd like to ask when we talk to them. Early in 2003, the band went on tour with CKY.
Why did you get kicked off of the CKY tour?
What did you do, Ethan?
I mean, I feel like you have to do some pretty bad shit to get kicked off of a CKY tour.
I'm going
to
go the opposite way and say that...
You're too good?
Or they were doing, they didn't vibe, and they're like, we're just going to back out, and then CKY was probably like, we kicked them off.
Yeah, maybe they just didn't fit. Like, it doesn't make sense to see them together, and probably CKY fans were like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that's kind of like what I think. I don't know. We'll find out the real answer here.
And then the other thing that I was going to talk about was the story about MGK and Tyson. So Tyson filmed a movie with Megan Fox called Johnny and Clyde, and I guess... Throughout the whole movie, like, Megan Fox plays this villain where she, like, she's, like, teasing Tyson's character, and she keeps putting her fingers in his mouth. And at the end, Megan Fox's character dies, and Tyson had this idea to be like, okay, well, now when you're dead, I come and put my fingers in your mouth. and MGK was in the trailer. Dyson telling the story, he calls MGK Pistol Pete. And he says, he said that just Pistol Pete just blew up on him, exploded with anger and jealousy, and was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're not putting your fingers in my girlfriend's mouth. And well, he just went 0 to 100.
Well, what happened?
Tyson was just like, okay. Like, he was like, I made space for it, and I took it in. And he actually used that switch flipping for another character that he plays in The Prisoner's Daughter or whatever. He was like, I had this scene that I was working on with Kendall, with Logan Roy, where my character had to go 0 to 100, and MGK's outburst was my inspiration for that. I didn't know how I was going to handle that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And that's, there you go, genius, right there, mm-hmm. To be like, oh, something happened to me in real life. I'm going to take it and use it as an art thing. Yeah. That's like not, people don't normally do that. They don't think like that.
Dude, and like when he was talking about filming The Prisoner's Daughter, he was talking about how he started painting. He's like, yeah, that was when I started painting. And I actually made this painting and then I gave it to the makeup artist. And he's just like you said, like he has to be constantly creating stuff. And he's just like this creative genius.
He does give, he gives like, I don't wear shoes.
Oh, yeah. He like, did not have shoes at our Zook show,
yeah,
remember?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
He's
yeah,
in the club with bare feet.
Yeah. He's like one of those guys. Like, you would never like pin him for that, but he's like very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that how I'll say it. He's like a barefoot type of dude, if you guys know what I'm talking about.
One other weird thing, not a weird thing, but just in the liner notes, this album was produced by Tim O'Hare. Do you remember who Tim O'Hare is?
The founder of the Chicago Airport.
Oh, yeah. That's him, actually. He is the guy who produced... Why can't I get this booklet out?
The founder of the Chicago Airport, ladies and gentlemen.
He actually recorded this album at the Chicago Airport. It was right after he recorded and produced Say Anything.
Oh, really?
Is a real boy. He's our guy from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
He produced this?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
But they actually recorded it in Brooklyn at Mission Sound and Headgear Studio. And Tyson and Nick were blown away. They were like, we fucking did it, dog. We're 18 years old, just graduated high school, straight to New York to make a record, man, with Doghouse Records. That's got to be a fucking cool thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. And they deserve it.
Lived the dream.
Yeah, they really did. And, you know, there's a couple of bands that we've talked to that did similar things that didn't really stand the test of time. These guys just kept getting bigger.
They really did. Like, it's interesting that they're playing this album at When We Were Young, because this is not, like, the seminal All-American Rejects album. Move Along is definitely like,
yeah, but I think it's one. Cool they're doing this.
I think it's cool too. This album to me, it just felt like there were like diamonds in the rough. Like, it's got these three really standout songs, Paper Heart, in my opinion, Swing Swing, and the last song. And you can kind of just see like, oh shit, like this band is something really, really special. And then I think with Move Along, that's kind of like their like crown jewel album. But yeah, I think it's really cool that they're doing this one.
Schwing, schwing. There's some Reddit, like, hot take situations going on. I don't even know if this is that out of a take. The All-American Rejects were better than most of the early 2000s bands we talk about, but are remembered poorly because MTV pushed them so hard as teen girl music.
I did see Tyson, he joked that they were a girlfriend band.
Yeah, and he's self-aware.
Yeah.
Like, that's another thing about people who are geniuses. Just self-aware of what they are, how you're perceived. Oh, man, a lot of stuff reminds me of me in a lot of ways. So many ways. The height, mainly.
Yeah. The
height, mainly.
Yeah, you guys are about the same height.
Yeah. It's really rough, you guys, being in a room with, like, Tyson and Gabe and who
Nat.
Else? Nat.
And MGK.
And MGK. It's really like, nothing will make you feel more like a piece of shit. Like, really, nothing. Just, I'm just like, oh, I'm just nothing.
Just,
you know?
I'm just down here. You're all the way up there.
Yeah, when like a grown man has to bend over to talk to you.
I felt really, like, Gabe was like talking to me at that party the other night. And I was like, craning my neck up. So, and I'm not as short as you.
I never really thought about it until I saw myself in a picture, like when I was like 20.
I think that's pretty much it for this record. Do you have "If You Like This, You Might Like That"?
No.
I also don't.
I didn't do that part. I mean, but what can we say?
Let's see what Joni said. She said, "If you like this, you might like..." I don't agree with any of these, but she says, "So Wrong, It's Right" by All Time Low. No. The Somerset and the Main and All Time Low. No. We Are the In Crowd. No.
I have a good one.
Who?
First Killers album.
Mm. Yeah. I'm looking at Spotify. It says Plain White Tees.
Anything goes on a place like this. I said that anything goes, and don't blink, you might miss. Just railing oxys in my room at my parents'
house. That's what you were listening
to that album. Yeah.
You know, I'd love to see who else was like included at the Hollister store. Yeah, but... literally, I was like, okay, Hollister music. I type in Hollister Store 2000s playlist. The first song is All American Rejects.
What else? What do we got?
Good Charlotte, I Just Want to Live. Perfect by Simple Plan. The Fray, How to Save a Life.
Perfect.
Ms. Biz, You and Me by Lifehouse. You know, I can't think of anybody who was really doing what All American Rejects were doing as well as they were doing it. Like, to me, they just sound like... they sound like Southern California, even though they're from Oklahoma. They sound like the OC, like that soundtrack. Mm-hmm. They sound like the Hollister store. And I can't figure out who else was doing it that well.
What was this? This is actually a really good, if you like that, you might like this. Hold on, let me see. OC. The Coconut OC. Records. Do you remember them?
No, sir.
Ready for this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You sing this song all the time. For a second there, I thought you'd disappear. This is more similar to All American Rejects, yeah. It rains a lot this
time of year. I don't know if this is in 4/4. Is it? Like you're still around. Hell, no, no. Good chorus.
Yeah.
Good, right?
It's good.
Anyway, if you got that, that's that, that band is called Coconut Records, and it is, in fact, Jason Schwartzman.
Oh.
It's just Jason Schwartzman.
Cool.
It's just him.
The Schwartzman.
Drummer for Phantom Planet and in literally every Wes Anderson movie.
Cool. Love that.
Yep.
All right, guys, that's about it for The All American Rejects by The All American Rejects. For The All American Rejects.
Featuring The All American Rejects.
Presented by Doghouse Records and DreamWorks Pictures. Stay tuned for our interview with Nick Wheeler and Chris Gaylor.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for taking the time, you guys.
Nick and Chris, thank you guys for being here. Welcome to CD Burners. Today, you know, we just did a kind of a deep dive on the self-titled All American Rejects album.
It was great. She is 22 this year.
Dang. Dude. Yeah, I mean it's pretty crazy listening to it again and realizing that you guys were like 18 years old when you were writing
17 and 19.
17.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I would never be able to be 17 years old and writing songs like Swing Swing and you know, the last song. Like, that is just, it's wild. Those are just incredible pop songs.
Dude, thanks, man. Can you just give us, like, I don't know. I think it's really interesting because you did say it's 22 years old, you know, which is like a crazy thing because I remember, you know, I remember stealing it off the internet. And
sick.
Yeah, it's I think I mentioned it in the episode. Like, I think Swing Swing was maybe the first song I ever stole offline.
That's kind of cool.
Aww. Romantic. Yeah. Aww.
You're welcome. But if dude, can you guys just I just want like a little snapshot of what you guys were like at the time. What it was
that
like for you, like day to day.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been 2001 when we were writing that record. We only had 5 songs to our name. And we had an EP, you know, speaking of CD burners, I burned a bunch of them on my home computer, on my Dell, that we recorded them on, actually, as well, with Cakewalk back in those days. Yeah.
Whoa. I haven't thought about that since probably then.
Yeah. and we were, you know, selling them at our shows for $5 and also mailing them to record labels because CDs had addresses for the record label on the back of them. Packed one in a padded envelope and sent it to Doghouse Records because I had a bunch of Get Up Kids CDs. And, you know, yeah, an intern there actually listened to an unsolicited demo and, you know, passed it up the, you know, up the flagpole, no pun intended. And yeah, somebody listened to it and they flew out to Tulsa, signed us, and we're like, cool, let's make a record. We're like, okay, but we only have 5 songs. So the rest of that year, the rest of 2001, Tyson was finishing up high school. I was enrolled in college, wasn't going much, but, he would come over every day after school and we would work on tunes. And I think we wrote 1 song a month for the rest of that year. And we went to New York, to work with Tim O'Hare to record the 11 songs that we had written. That was our first album.
Dude, You brought up the Get Up Kids, and that's like kind of they were really a big stepping stone for me also.
Same, yeah.
But you brought up a couple things actually, like small town, Get Up Kids. I want to know like what was the music scene like in that town? Like, were you guys playing out? Like, were you guys like going out, or was this strictly like doing this at your house and writing songs by yourselves because you wanted
That was what it was, is us at my house writing songs by ourselves. I think me and Tyson grew up in Stillwater, which is about 30,000 people without the college. Mike and Chris grew up closer to Oklahoma City. So I think the scene question, we'll probably have different answers to that. Stillwater had no scene. It's now become known for like red dirt music. We didn't fit in that. So we were just trying to play, you know, wherever we could play. There weren't local venues. There weren't all age venues. So we had to play college bars and mostly just play covers and sneak in, you know, some originals occasionally. But I mean, about it as far as our scene goes. We were because there was no scene, it made us look outward and want to get out and get on tour and, you know, be more than, you know, just a bar band in our hometown.
What kind of songs were you guys covering? I mean, it's interesting to hear you say like the Get Up Kids are such a big influence, you know, but like Get Up Kids come from like hardcore and it's like, I don't hear any hardcore influence in All American Rejects. But like, obviously if you're playing out at bars and you're covering songs, like some of that sort of playing and style is probably going to like seep into like what you guys are creating on your own.
As far as covers go, it was, you know, stuff they would want to hear in bars. You know, I think we played Proclaimers 500 Miles.
nice.
I think. Video Killed the Radio Star. But the President's of the United States version, not the Buggles version.
It's so sick that they had 5 strings between those guys. I like that.
I love that band.
Yeah, they're awesome. I fucking love. Don't think that they get enough credit, but they're huge for like a couple of years here.
Oh, dude.
Oh, sorry. So, I don't want to talk about President of the United States of America. They fucking rock, though.
That's okay. Why not?
We can segue to that.
I mean, look, dude.
We also did Mrs. Robinson, but the Lemonheads version. Mm-hmm. Universal songs that people in bars would just want to hear. And then, like I said, we would slip in some original songs, and then eventually there were more original songs than covers. We would do our cover set and then we would do our original set. And then it just became original tunes and we were, you know.
Were you guys playing with like a Casio drum machine? Like I read that, you know, at the Tulsa show when the label came out, it was Nick and Tyson and you guys were literally like pressing the beat on the Casio keyboard and then performing the songs. Like what was the setup here for these cover bands?
It was before we met Mike and Chris, we were playing these bars and, you know, going on tour with a Korg Triton, which is basically a Casio. Okay. Each song was on a 3.5-inch floppy disk that we would load into the Korg Triton. It would have, you know, drum loops and synthesizers and things that we couldn't recreate live as a couple of teenagers. And in doing that, we met Mike and Chris, and then Chris took over running the Korg Triton for a little bit. How was that?
My first show was disastrous because I had it on top of the monitor. And so the CDs kept, or the disc kept skipping from the bass rumble. And so I just kept having to come over and turn it off. Dude, I try to recreate the drum loops.
Yeah, that thing has seen some better days. We had a lot of disasters. There was one festival we were playing where it was raining and the canopy roof collapsed and just buckets of water just dumped on the Korg Triton.
There was no playback back then, though.
No.
We were pioneering some playback stuff.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You probably weren't playing to a click or anything either, right?
Well, that was the point. I mean, if you listen to that first record, songs like My Paper Heart and Time Stand Still were built around a drum loop, and then live drums come in later on top of that. So yeah, in order to perform with those loops and those keyboard parts, there was a click track. Chris had the big cans.
Yeah, the sweatband to keep him like really glued to my ears.
Wow.
Dude, it's really cool because like that, like I said, it was like the first songs I stole, and I hadn't heard programmed drums in alternative music before.
I don't really know where that came from. I think it was our interpretation of like 90s bands that were doing like kind of more like sampled hip hop kind of beats and injecting that into their records. And then I didn't know how to do that, so I had this keyboard that we were using for key and string parts and stuff, and so I just started using like their version of like the 909 and 808 samples and just programming that instead, thinking I was doing what other people were doing at the time, but I guess I wasn't.
That's why I think it is really incredible, because I think at the time it was out of necessity probably.
Yeah, and absolutely. It was the tools were limited, so we were just doing what we could with what we had.
And for me, like I remember like, playing those old keyboards and like, to hear that on a song that actually sounds full and makes you feel something instead of just like having it play like those chords that they play was really intriguing. It was honestly what I considered, because I'd never heard any like real electronic music at the time. I was like into punk and hardcore, and like so for me listening to this, I was like, oh, this is electronic music. Which is couldn't be further from what it is, but I
understand what you mean. Yeah, any element that's not guitar, bass, drums, like oh, this is like dance music.
Yeah, I always wondered, thinking back, like I think he did it. Like I said, it probably was due to out of necessity, but like if you're given the opportunity to record real drums and to have other instruments at your disposal, do you think that like those songs would have sounded different? Or would you have kept this exactly how it is?
I don't know if they would have sounded different if we had more tools at our disposal. I mean, the Korg Triton can do it all.
More humans at your disposal.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe more humans at our disposal would work. I mean, if we were four people jamming from the beginning, perhaps it would sound different, but it was me and Tyson trying to create a full sound that we could recreate live. That was part of it. So that's where like, drum loops and stuff, it's like, well, if we're going to be playing to like fake drums, they need to sound like fake drums. We can't like just have sampled live drums and pull that off. That'll be weird. Maybe that's where that came from a little bit. But also we were just challenging ourselves to do new things. I mean, when you're a kid playing in bands, it's guitars and drums. That's all it is. So I think we had a new toy and we were challenging ourselves to do, to take advantage of it and find cool stuff.
So you guys were kids and you're Tyson literally finishes senior year. You guys fly to Brooklyn. You're in this studio.
Oh, no. We drove.
You drove to Brooklyn. Okay.
In our band. Yeah.
Awesome. You're in this big time studio working with this producer, Tim O'Hare. And, Do you have any specific memories or moments about the actual recording process? Like, what were those days like for you guys? And is there anything that sticks out in your mind as sort of like a fond memory or like a weird moment that happened in the studio?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those were the days that we were experiencing the first of everything. You know what I mean? The first tour, the first studio, the first working with the producer. So I have very vivid memories of that. We did basic tracks at Mission Sound, which is a really cool Williamsburg studio. You know, we did drums and bass and rhythm guitars to tape. You know, watching Tim work a, you know, vintage Neve console and punch in and out on a tape machine, like, it was mind-blowing to just watch and experience and, you know, get to be a part of. But then, you know, we were on a budget too. This is Doghouse Records. We weren't like making a major label record. So after we finished those basic tracks, we went into this little hole in the wall next to a kickboxing gym. We had to be mindful of what, when we recorded, because they would have kickboxing classes and there'd be like yelling and all kinds of fucking...
Like UHF with Weird Al. Totally. Live next to the karate studio.
That's exactly what it was.
Dude, and now we've got Russians tearing a guy in half outside. Yeah. Some things never change.
But I have very vivid memories of those days, especially because, you know, we would be taking breaks around kickboxing classes, and then we would also... At dinner time, we'd go back to Tim's place where we were crashing. Tyson and I were sleeping on his floor, you know, again, low budget. And he would cook us dinner every night. And it was an amazing experience and just a great mentor and just kind of guide to have at that moment in our lives and our career.
You guys seem to be kind of music nerds from the beginning. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, you guys are like, it seems like you guys are naming things. You're like, this is the X, but like, and I don't fucking know.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. Like, you're like, this is the thing. And, you know, like, and recording your own stuff from when you guys were so young, and on all those demos, like, I don't think this has much to do with the album, but, what are like, as far as you personally, like, what are some of the most incredible advancements in production that you think that you've seen over the last like 22 years? What have been some things that have amazed you the most? Because the reason why I'm asking is like, I just kind of picked up Ableton and I'm like,
oh, nice.
So I'm amazed. Like I'm blown away.
And well, I'm amazed at people who know how to work that software, because that's what we use live now. And I can barely wrap my head around that. So to be able to create on that platform is mind blowing to me. So good on you, man.
Well, like, I mean, but you guys were doing when you were like mentioning tapes and it's like recording to tape and then also floppy disk, which like people are going to have to, like, I guarantee people are going to have to like,
you're gonna
look
have to
up
Google what the fuck that
is. But like, I mean, for, you know, in the last like 22 years, like something come out or sounds like an advancement and that helped you, that you are like, oh, this is incredible and amazing as a dork mm-hmm. person, music guy.
What's funny is that I think the last stop hasn't changed. Everybody will always try to emulate vintage gear. You know, mm-hmm. even there's plugins to recreate these old Neve consoles and all the, you know, all, you know, tape machines, et cetera. I think that hasn't changed. I don't know what the new thing that we'll all be emulating in 20 years will be. Mm-hmm. But as far as what's changed the most, I feel is just the ease of production. When we would go on the road and, you know, be fooling ourselves thinking we were going to be writing our next record while touring. You know, I had an 18 space rack with an audio interface, a MIDI interface, because you couldn't just plug a keyboard into your computer. It had to go through something else that would then interpret that information and send it to your computer. A two rack space, like pod for guitar sounds. You can literally just do all that on an iPad now. You know what I mean? So I think the ease and what you're capable of doing on a smaller scale, on a mobile scale, that's probably changed the most. But again, you know, then you're just slapping those plugins on there, making it sound like it's on, you know, made on vintage gear.
Did you guys, you know, like, it's hard. Like, how do I phrase this question? Like, you know, you're on Doghouse, and like, I wouldn't necessarily say that you guys are punk. And you know, I remember like my scene. I grew up in Tucson, which is like, you know what I mean? And it was like, there was a lot of like punk stuff there. And like me playing some of the softer shit, like in some of my bands, like kind of wouldn't, everybody kind of got along, but like, you know, faced a little bit of adversity. Like, did you guys ever get any of that sense? Because you guys are, you know, really writing pop catchy songs, but are adjacent to, right?
I mean, Chris can probably speak more to that. Like we were talking about earlier, like as far as scenes go, I think Chris and Mike's experience is probably different in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, I was a hardcore kid, like hardcore and punk and stuff. And I remember when we first, especially in like the, when we first started the first and second album.
Would you have kicked our ass when you were in?
No, I wasn't like that. I wasn't like that. But most of the time.
Yeah. But,
there were bands, like the hardcore bands, you know, that flat ironed their hair like this and then had their belt buckle off to the side that were, you know, the heavier it was, the more cred it had vibe. And I always thought it was silly coming from like hardcore. So I was like, have you toured squat houses in Europe? Cause I have, you know, it's not about what you play really. So it would, but it, it seemed to have gone away, especially in the past, maybe 10 years, people are, they just like music now. You know,
I've seen that, especially, I think I really, really agree with that. Like, I think that that's a really important thing about, look, I'm not a humongous fan of the internet. I think it does more like net harm, but
I agree
also, but I also believe that it's done the thing where you can like All American Rejects and Bane and, all of these things at the same time. And sure. Go to whatever you want, and it's not like a weird thing. When I was growing up, those things were pretty specifically different.
And you listened to one genre, and that was it.
You're totally right. Yeah, because now genre is not really a thing. Because people listen to playlists, and that's, you know, most people's playlists are all over the place. I don't even think there could be like a scene or a genre.
It's just music now. Yeah. I can be open about my love for the Cardigans.
Yeah.
Could you never be open for your love for
love? I don't know, they're my favorite band, but when you were younger, it was like, you know, your friends are going to razz you. I just try to avoid that as much as possible.
it's so weird, man. Like, cause I never had like I said, there were scenes where I grew up, but I think for the most part, everybody was like, it wasn't like a razzing thing, but there was, I think everybody was like, look, it was, I grew up with like cholos and cowboys, and everybody like liked everybody, and kind of it was a small melting pot of what was to come. But I did see, you know, kids that would come from out of town being like, no, we don't do this, or playing these fucking heavy shows. Like, I don't like this. This sucks. Like this. I just always wondered that about a band like the All American Rejects. Cause I know you 2002 was like the height of that for me and my friends. And I always wondered what that looked like if for you guys, if you're a part. Yeah.
For, you know, my experience in Stillwater, Oklahoma, there wasn't a scene. There weren't other bands we were competing with or trying to fit in with. So I think all we were trying to do was write catchy songs that we liked that, you know, could get us out of there and elevate us.
What a wild thing to just be like, I have to go. I have to write song. I have to write a good song to leave.
Yeah, that was my feeling.
Get me out of here.
Yeah, you're going to get the fuck out, dude. Well, I mean, look, we kind of always ask this type of shit about the, whenever we're looking back at these albums and, you know, like I was talking about before, it is such a sound. I, you know, going back and if I listening to it, and if anything was changed, I would be like, the fuck, I love the way this sounds, even if it is not perfect in how we think things are perfect. But, you know, looking back at this album in particular, is there anything that you guys would go back and do differently if had to do it again?
Our second record, Move Along, was made very differently. There was a budget. There was a major label. There was A&R. There was a big studio with not only a producer, but an engineer, a Pro Tools guy, all kinds of technicians. And that record has a vibe. Like, it's, we made a big rock record. I think had we had those resources making the first record, I think it would be different. Would it be successful? I don't know. I think the songs hopefully would have made it successful regardless, but I think there's like a charm to that, like, low budget vibe that the first record has that I don't think we could recreate with, you know, more people or more tools or more, you know, real instruments than the few that we had at our disposal.
That's the right answer.
I just want to ask.
Okay. I mean, we're never gonna re-record it and find out. That's for sure.
Right. No, I know. I'm just like, that's the right answer. Like, I always like, even those like these mistakes that people are like, "Fuck, dude!" Listening back to that thing that I did 22 years ago when I was a kid, I wish I would have done differently. Yeah, maybe if you would have re-recorded it a year later, things would be different. But yeah, 20 years. That's what that sounds like, right? And, yeah, that's what that is.
That's been one of the hardest things to come to terms with, I think, is just everything we do is just a photograph and a capturing a moment in time. And, you know, I think even now to this day, I find that I've been playing parts wrong live for 20 years, you know, and maybe I'll fix them. Maybe muscle memory won't let me. It's just a feeling and what we were feeling at the time.
Was there a did you guys make the choice to play the self-titled at When We Were Young versus Move Along?
No.
And why?
No, we were never aware that that was a thing.
Okay. It was just, you guys are playing the self-titled. Here's the flyer.
That's what they say. I don't think we'll be doing that.
Got it. All right. Fair. Love that.
They advertised that, but no.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We'll play some songs off it, sure. But we'll play all the other ones you want to hear too.
I don't know, man. I really love that album. Like, as like I said, that was kind of my first, like, that's like what, you know, I personally, like, that's a big, I know it's not a bigger album, but it is a bigger album to like me personally, because that's,
I understand,
like,
that. I've got records like that too. I appreciate that.
You were at a certain age, just like of discovery, and that happens to come out at that moment. And
yeah, it's like us with like Jimmy World Clarity or Get Up Kids, Something to Write Home About.
Those are
REM Monster was another one. Siamese Dream. Like, those are like life defining, DNA defining records. So that means a lot to hear that from people.
I don't think guitar has sounded better than it does on Siamese Dream. I think that's like peak guitar. Like, I don't think you can get a guitar to sound any better than the way that sounds.
I go down rabbit holes to find out what pedals he was using, all that kind of shit.
Dude, it was probably just like Metal Zone or something.
It's just a
sound tanks.
It's just a fucking it's just a Big Muff, an MXR Distortion Plus, and a Phase 90. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's like, it's, which is so wild. It's like every time I listen to that, I'm like, how is it this guy? Is it this person? Is it this time?
All the above. And again, it's a moment in time that they'll never recreate. And that's okay. We understand that as, you know, as musicians ourselves.
Moments in time, I feel like over the past few years, you know, there have been a few interviews where Tyson has been like, hey, I don't know if the Rejects are ever going to put out anything new. Do you guys have stuff that you're working on? What is going on at this moment in time with the Rejects beyond, you know, sort of this festival coming up next month? And
well, a lot, actually. I mean, this is our full-time gig again for the first time in a while. After Kids in the Street in 2012, we toured that record relentlessly because we loved it and we put a lot into it. But that was the fourth record of the machine. You know, you take a year to write a record, take a year to record a record, take 2 years to tour that record, and then do it all again. And that was our 20s. I turned 20 when we were making our first album, and I turned 30 when we were touring Kids in the Street. So that was that. And then we all needed to just get off the road and have some life experiences and do some other stuff. So we chose not to continue that cycle and do LP number 5 after that. So for the last 10 years, we've been keeping the lights on. We've been playing some shows, releasing some songs here and there. But it was when we were young in 2022 that we realized there really is love and a place for, you know, the music that we make, both for the fans and for us. So after that, we're like, okay, well, that felt really good. That was fun. What should we try next? And we did a tour last year, and we didn't think it would be as successful as it was. We didn't think people would really care. Last time we did a headlining tour was supporting Kids in the Street. And we were playing, you know, clubs and some small theaters. And we were set out to go play these like big amphitheaters last summer. We're like, oh fuck, nobody's coming to this. And it was the biggest headlining tour we've ever done. It's like, okay, that was fun. That was amazing. What's next? So we just recorded a cover of one of our collective favorite songs, Flagpole Setup by Harvey Danger.
Oh, that's hell yeah.
Yeah, that's coming out on Friday. And that was us like, hey, let's get in the studio for the first time in years. See what that feels like. Let's not just step on a stage and rehearse during sound check. Let's set up on the floor in a studio and play together and make something. So we did that. And that was a lot of fun. So now we're talking about, okay, what's the next thing? And yeah, I mean, that might be new music. That might be, who knows? We'll see where it goes. But we're having fun making stuff again.
Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that it was like you had to get out there and see it, that people really, really love this stuff, in order for you guys to be like, all right. We weren't wrong. We're writing some shit. We're like, we like doing this. We're going to continue to do like what we know is the right thing to do. Cause it was strange. You were right at that time. When Kids in the Street came out, it was a strange time for like
total rock sea change
and alternative music. Yeah. Very strange. I mean, look, that's when we, what, 2014, you said?
The record came out in 2012. 12, I mean, we toured it for a couple of years.
Yeah. And TJ and I started, you and I, end of 2014. And when we were like at a total, like, this was not, people were not doing it.
Yeah.
And we were like, we like this. so, I mean, it's, you know, like it never, like when you guys were cutting it out, like we were just getting started, because we were like, we can't let this stuff, there's still like an audience and there's still like people that really love this shit.
Totally. So. And yeah, I think you're right. I think that was a moment, not just when we were young, but just that was maybe the catalyst, or maybe the biggest example of us and a lot of other bands being like, oh shit, people still like this. Cool. I think a lot of bands are capitalizing on that and kind of just riding the wave. We've always tried to be very intentional, and we've always been very thought out to the point of overthinking what the next move is, what we're doing, what we're creating. And that's what we're trying to do. Like you know, exactly what you said, we're trying to do the right thing. For our band, for our fans, and not just re-record, you know, our first record or move along or whatever.
I've really been impressed with a lot of like new music lately, and there's been like, I don't know, you know, since we do this, I was doing radio for a while.
Oh, cool. Where at?
K-Rock and Amazon, like during Free Emo Night, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was kind of like forced to listen to some stuff that like I never really would. And they let me kind of play whatever I wanted to. And I wanted to expose people to things that I think are cool. I don't know. What you guys listen to anything that you like lately that you're like, oh, this is fucking awesome. Like this is like a newer artist.
There's this band Bad Nerves that I'm really into lately. Like punk, like a punk band. They kind of remind me of the Spits. If you ever listen to them,
Yeah.
It's really good.
I know the Spits. I don't know Bad. I know the name Bad Nerves. I can't
it's
say
really
that.
It's really good. They're from England, but it's kind of like really Spits-esque like riffs with a little more melody in the vocals.
I like it when you can throw – when that, look, I think that was a really cool – I don't want to talk about it. I'll go on forever. Nick, what about you, dude? You're like into anything, you know, heard it was, anything cool?
It was around COVID. I got to the point in my life where I was like, okay, I'm either going to keep listening to the same shit I've been listening to since I was a teenager, or I'm going to find new things that, you know, make me feel something. If not just to be a music fan, to just like keep doing music and creating music that sounds fresh. And so I would just, you know, went on Apple Music playlists and stuff and found some really cool stuff that I followed and have been into for several years. Now, Gang of Youths, I think, was the first one. Their Go Further in Lightness record was amazing. Sam Fender is another artist that I fucking love. Seagirls was a rad band. This whole like playlist thing, I can just, it's, you know, it's like when you were a kid and you would put on the radio and then you would hear, you know, I don't know, Harvey Danger, come on, and you didn't know what it was. You're like, this, I fucking love this song. What is this? And you wait for them to say what it is on the radio. But in this case, I look at my phone while I'm out on a walk with my dog. I'm like, what is this? I'm like, oh, cool. Save it to my playlist, you know? And then I'm a fan of that band now. That's a cool resource and a cool tool for music listeners now, I think.
Yeah, it's way different for guys like us to like, yeah. Instead of having to like go search it, it's just like you can just be listening and then you're like, mm-hmm. I like all of this. They know my brain.
Totally. And it
really strange.
It was so aggravating. You would hear something on the radio, and this was before you could just go like Google a lyric and be like, what was that song I just heard? You literally had to be like, I hope they come on and talk after this song so they fucking say what it was. And if they don't, you just got to wait for it to come back on. And that time, I hope they come on and talk afterwards and tell me what that song was.
Or if you find out who it is and you go to buy it and you're like, okay, I hope this is good. Because yeah. Sometimes you can't even listen to it. You get home, it's got like one good song. Uh-huh. You're like, man. Yeah. That was my lunch money.
$20.
Totally. Dude, I think over the last couple months, like Shazam has been one of the like my most used apps. It's yeah. like on my it's actually like I didn't know that you could like just do
Control
it
Center Shazam. Listening.
Yeah, it's on yep. It's Control Center Shazam, mm-hmm. but like also fuck like yeah. I didn't know that you could do it while you're like listening stuff through headphones. I thought it was just that's how fucking old I am.
Oh, that's to, like, news to me.
Yeah, you can just do it while you are listening to stuff. So if you're listening to a podcast and they do like an interlude, you could be like, go back and then like do it while that is happening and be like, find that little clip.
I'm still the guy that like holds his phone up to a speaker in a restaurant. Dude, like, I didn't know you could do it with headphones.
Yeah, I just tried it one day and then I was like, oh my God, this opened up an entirely new world for me. So.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to join us on the CD Burners podcast. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure getting to talk about this album and listen to this album and hear all about everything that you guys are working on. And it was great to see you. Thanks for doing this, guys.
Yeah, y'all too. Have a good one.
Yeah, too. Thank you, guys. I'm excited for that Flagpole Sitta cover, dude. That's fucking
hope you
sick.
Dig it. We had a lot of fucking fun making it, so hope you dig it.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly one of the – it's like one of the best songs.
I know, right?
Really good.
Yeah. All right, all you guys. Right.